Hello, hello. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in show. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Today we're going to talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement, and we welcome back Darren Tracy. He's a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He's a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he's a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. To join us to ask Darren to fix your house over the phone, you can call 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back to Vox Pop. How are you?
Thank you. I'm fine, Sarah.
It has been a hot summer, fairly hot, and a wet summer, fairly wet. What are you seeing a lot of so far?
In terms of the wetness has affected homes more than the hot. Been a lot of damp basement problems, high humidity problems, mold mildew problems.
And what are some of the best steps people should take to alleviate or prevent that kind of thing?
You can attack it from many fronts. So gutters, direct water away from your home, around the perimeter of your foundation. Make sure the grade pitches away from the foundation. Also, you can install a 6-mil poly. It seems like every show I talk about 6-mil poly plastic, polyethylene, the multi-purpose product for minimizing vapor and water problems. Anyways, you could put that around the perimeter of your home, maybe 2 or 3 feet wide. Cover that with pea stone or grass even. And that helps shed water away from adjacent to your home, water that might run off the roof. That really helps out a lot, and that's relatively simple and inexpensive to do. And then it becomes more expensive and extensive from there. You could install French drains around the perimeter of your interior of your basement and install a sump pump.
You can install French drains?
Sure. It's just a...
One could install French drains.
One could. I'm not going to, but one can. And that would just be a 4-inch wide cut in your concrete slab around the perimeter, creating a trough or trench, directing that to a deeper sump hole, installing a sump pole and pumping the water away. That's assuming that you have a concrete floor. Some callers in the past have talked about dirt floors in their basement, and those can be improved upon by installing that 6-mil poly I referred to, and then pouring concrete on top of that, or even concrete pavers on top of that. That really helps out with the humidity and water problems in the basement.
And that it must be something you're getting called about a lot this summer. First lesson,
We actually don't do that much construction work anymore. Our construction company is still in business. We've been in business 30 years, but we were, quote, a real construction company some number of years ago and had many employees. But as I've gotten older, we have more of a skeleton crew. And we work on our own projects, and I do engineering consulting. So I'm in that transition phase of my life.
Understood. So. The number to call to ask Darren your home improvement questions, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And we will take our first call from David. Hello, David in Richmond. How are you? Hello, David?
Hi, yes, I'm good.
Great. What's your question for Darren?
Oh, hi, Darren. I know it's been a real wet summer, but this has been going on for, since the winter, maybe last fall. There's a really bad odor of mold and mildew in our house, and I hate to admit it, but I might have not used a power washer the right way as far as I was going up instead of down. And maybe some water got, up behind the shingles, and I just don't know. So
okay,
I'm just wondering what to do about the mold and the smell.
Okay, David. I think that you probably didn't cause that problem. Anything that you power washed should dry out. over some period of time. I would say it may have contributed to the problem, but I think there are other underlying problems. What I would suggest is to first get a humidistat and put that in your home. Do you have a humidistat, a humidity gauge, a hygrometer?
I know what they are, but we do not.
Okay, that's the first step, to find out what the humidity is in your house. And the desired humidity in your house this time of year would be under 60%. Under 50% would be great, but if you can keep it under 60%, I think that's okay to prevent the growth of mold and mildew. Mold and mildew need three things to survive, and that's they need humidity, proper amount of humidity, they need the proper temperature range, and they need a food source. So if you can eliminate any one of those, then that will help solve the problem of mold and mildew. So procure a humidistat, and they're not expensive. You can buy them at a hardware store or a big box store for $10 or $15. Okay, and then, so say that you are above 60% in your home. What you'd want to do is run a dehumidifier to bring the humidity down below that 60% level. There are other tricks. If you want to cool your house, say you don't have air conditioning or you want to minimize the use of air conditioning, you want to open up the windows and get fresh air, that's good. But I wouldn't leave those windows cranked all the way open all night, because what happens is that cool air comes in, cools things off inside your home, and therefore, that cooler air can't hold as much moisture, and then it condenses, and you get a higher humidity inside your home. So you've got to use your windows strategically.
Yeah, I'm good about that. We close up the first floor, but we want air upstairs, so we leave them open there. But and I always open the windows first thing when it's not too hot. So I'm pretty fussy about circulation, but. Okay. You know, the odor persists, and it's giving my girlfriend sore throats, and it's really affecting her more than me. So,
step one is to get that humidistat, and then you'll know where you are, and you can run your dehumidifier accordingly. Also, a lot of moisture wicks up from the basement, so if you have a basement door, keep that closed. Basement windows, I keep basement windows closed in the summertime. That may be counterintuitive to some people, but again, you don't want that warm air coming in and cooling and condensing out. You want to keep your basement sealed up.
So the inside door to the basement should be shut off the kitchen?
Yes, definitely. You do not want any warm air going into the basement, because what happens is it's like breathing on a mirror in the bathroom. Your warm air hits that cooler surface, and the cooler surface and the cooler air can't hold as much moisture, and it condenses out and raises the humidity to the level that the mold and mildew like.
So the outside trap door to the basement should be shut this time of year?
That should be shut. That should be shut.
Okay, I thought the circulation was good for it to air it out, but
I mean, if you're down there working, I would get some air in there and fresh air in there, but you want to... seal that up for the reasons that I explained. You could just understand warm air coming in, cooling and condensing.
Okay.
That's the problem. And it would be nice if you had, if the temperatures outside and inside were the same, say in the spring or the fall, you had to go ahead and open up windows and doors to the basement to air it out. But this time of year, you're going to introduce a lot of warm, moist air. It's going to cool and condense and raise the humidity. And that's going to want to travel up to your first and second floor, because there's a thing called stack effect where that moisture and that air will rise up through the first and second floor into the living area.
Seems counterintuitive to my feeble brain, but I'll take your advice.
Just think about clearing out the humidity, David.
Yeah, think about breathing on a mirror.
Yeah.
Thank you for your call.
Yeah.
Have a
All
great
right.
day.
You're welcome. Yep, Thank you.
Bye. We're here with Darren Tracy talking about home improvement. The phone number 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's go before a break. We'll go to Mark in Massachusetts. Hello, Mark.
Yeah, hi. I have something I'd like to get Darren's opinion on, and it's a pretty narrow question. But to save time, I'm not going to give you all the background and the peripheral issues unless you want them. And that'll take a minute, so you'll have to keep your finger off the eject button.
That's up to me.
Pardon me?
No, just go ahead. Just teasing. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I know Ray tends to be pretty quick with that button, so.
Yeah, I'm finding my pace.
Pardon me?
Nothing. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Here's the question. Will used motor oil painted on wood, will it prevent termite damage if for wood that's in contact with the ground?
I don't know. I don't know to tell you the truth. But if I was a termite, I'd probably chew on the wood that's not treated, coated with oil before chewing on the wood that is coated with oil. I don't think that that's the greatest product to use for termite prevention. There are probably other more suitable products out there. Have you researched that, Mark?
Yeah, I've looked this up online, and there are some differing opinions out there as to whether it works. Most of them indicate that it is an effective barrier. And I've got some I have pressure-treated wood, which some of it was attacked and some of it was not, and it's old-style pressure-treated wood from the 80s and 90s, where the active ingredient is arsenic. And some of it was attacked and some of it was not. So I'm just thinking about I've got some old motor oil hanging around, and it just seemed like I'm not really worried about soil contamination. There's no vegetation in the area, and the dirt is already not great stuff. It's already pretty dirty. So it just seemed to me that it might possibly if a termite bites into it, seems to be something that they wouldn't want to continue.
Well, as I said, if I was a termite, I would be less likely to chew into a piece of wood that had motor oil infused in it than not, but I'm not sure that that's the best chemical or liquid or ingredient to deter them. I think I would research that more. I mean, some of that oil can leach into the water table, too. So it's not just affecting the soil. It can drain down into the water, leach down into the water table. I know when I was growing up, we used to put motor oil on our driveway, dirt driveway, to keep the weeds down, and thought nothing of it. But with more, as science goes on and we learn more, that wasn't the thing to do. So,
Yeah, I understand.
I mean, termites are nasty. They're not that prevalent in this area compared to carpenter ants, but they can do a lot of damage. And from what I understand, like, they come and then they go. It's once they've done the damage, they're gone, and it's like lightning. They typically don't come back, or it's not as common for them to come back to a place that they've already been.
It was kind of interesting.
If there are any entomologists out there listening, I'd be interested on their take about that. But I did read that. I know that we've renovated buildings in the past occasionally that have had termite damage, and it's can be catastrophic.
Yeah, it was very interesting. What the damage looked like, it was that they were underground, and the damage stopped right at the surface of the ground. They didn't want to come into the light, and the tunneling, it just looked like classic vertical tunnels up and down the post. So it looked like classic termite damage, and I would never have put these posts in the ground in the first place. But unfortunately, a long time ago, when this was done, the local building inspector let the contractor get away with it, and I did not know as much back then as I do now. So I would never have agreed to it, knowing if I knew then what I know now. And I replaced the post with solid concrete piers. So it's going forward, it's not a problem. But I still have some posts in the ground that they look okay, but just sort of occurred to me it might be an effective barrier. And most of the opinions that I found online seem to think that it would work, for that narrow purpose at least of deterring insect damage.
Okay. I would take a close look inside. You said you think the damage stopped at the ground level and didn't progress into the home. I'd take a close look because there's not a lot of evidence of termite damage from the interior of a home. You'll see a small little trail on the surface of the wood if you look closely. But a lot of their work, the damage is hidden and it's difficult to see. So I'd keep an eye out, Mark.
Thank you for your call, Mark. It is time for us to take a break. We're talking to Darren Tracy about home improvements, property management, etc. The phone number, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop. I'm Sarah LaDuke, hosting the show for Ray Graff, who is taking some well-deserved time off. And Darren Tracy is here answering your home improvement questions. The phone number, 800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. And we're going to take a few questions, maybe quick, maybe not, from these emails, Darren. Let's take Cliff's question. Cliff emails in and says, tried to drain hot water tank, but the flow did not improve in my hot water tap, which has low flow. What would you do?
Cliff, you could check the screen in your faucet, but that would affect your cold water too if it's a single spout. If it's a double spout, check the screen in your faucet. Some screens have little aerator, or some faucets have little aerator screens.
Yep.
So I would check that. Sounds like your line might be plugging up someplace around the hot water tank. There may be a sediment in the tank itself. You could try draining it a second time. Those are my only suggestions.
All right. Cliff, try your ventilator or draining your hot water tank again. The number 800-348-2551. Shelley has emailed in and says, I'm having gutters installed. Should I buy gutter guards?
Shelley, I'm not sure about that. If it were me, I would probably not. I would try the gutters without them first. Gutter guards, in theory, are a good idea because it's no fun to clean out your gutters, and it seems like they're always filling up, and it reminds me I've got to clean out the gutters at my house.
Right.
It's always on that to-do list, and it's...
It's
it can be risky, too, if you have like a two-story house. You know, it's not easy getting a ladder up that high, so there's some danger involved. But what I've seen, I've cleaned out the gutter guards myself, and it could be just this particular brand, but they tend to clog up, too, especially with pine needles. They'll lodge in there, and then those pine needles will trap other leaves and not work well. So it's a tough call. I would try just the gutters at first, and if you can clean those out yourself or find somebody that can clean those out safely, I would try that.
Fantastic. One more email, and then we will go back to the phones. Tom wrote in and said, our two-story cape is 70 years old. There's a two-foot crack in the foundation. How serious is that?
That's a function of how large the crack is and if the crack is longitudinal or vertical. It really depends, and I'll mention right now, I do take some calls or some emails and answer simple questions. So if you wanted to send me a photo sometime after the show, I could take a look at it and give you a better idea. My email address is darren@westbranchinc.com. That's D-A-R-R-E-N at W-E-S-T-B-R-A-N-C-H. inc.com. And just in general terms, if your crack is moving, you want to be concerned about that. So you can measure it at a certain location, mark it, and reference that, say, in 3 months, 6 months, and a year. And if it's increasing, you definitely want to get a professional engineer involved. I would say a crack greater than 3/16 of an inch, or even greater than 1/8 of an inch, is something to be concerned about.
That's the width.
Well, a couple of reasons. One, you can get water in.
Right.
Greater than that means that something might be settling in your foundation instead of just concrete shrinkage, because concrete always shrinks after it's poured. So you will have a crack somewhere. unless the concrete is completely free to move, and often it's not. So you'll end up with a crack someplace. Diagonally at a window is a common area of cracking. So get a hold. Send me an email after I'll take a look at the picture. I guess I can't add any more than that, Sarah.
Right. But if it's not shifting, it mightn't be serious. But you'll take a look at that photo if
you even if
it
it's
in.
Not shifting, you can get water in. And, you know, sure. You don't want water in your basement, or you'll have a humidity problem like David had in his home. So,
all right, let's go back to the phones. The phone number 800-348-2551. Our guest is Darren Tracy, and we are welcoming George. Hello, George.
Hello.
Darren is all ears. Hi, Darren's all ears. Have at.
Okay, I have a foundation which is quite old. Pre-1850, on the inside in the cellar and the basement, the foundation is entirely made of stone, but there are gaps everywhere. It has never been filled in. How important is it to fill them in with concrete or whatever?
Hi, George. It's very important. Because if you don't fill those gaps, it gives the cobbles a place to move to and shift, and you don't want that to happen. So you should repoint that foundation, and you could use a type N, and as a Nancy mortar mix to repoint. There are different types of mortar based upon the strength. Type N is a medium strength mortar. You can buy that pre-bagged. Already has the sand and mortar and lime masonry cement in it that's needed. Just add water, and even a novice can play around with that and do a halfway decent job. You want to mix that material outdoors and have a dust mask on or be upwind, because the silica dust from the concrete mixing products, the sand, can be detrimental to your health. So you want to be concerned about that, but it's something just a novice can take on. Also, I might add to try to keep the water away from the foundation on the outside. Sarah asked a question earlier how to keep a basement or a house less humid. You want to keep the water out of the foundation area, particularly in those cobbles that you have for a foundation, because it's really not a strong foundation system as compared to a reinforced concrete basement that would be built today. So and water is the enemy. Water gets in there and tends to move things, and in the fall and the winter it can freeze, and that ice expands and puts pressure inward. So you want to do everything you can do to keep water away from that foundation on the outside. So those are the two things I would do, George. Good luck.
Thank you for your call, George. Let's keep them rolling. We will go to Nancy in Schenectady. Hello, Nancy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I am calling because we have a new house, a couple years old. We had our garage insulated, which in the winter is great because we pull our cars in at night and our engines warm up the garage just enough so that it's not freezing cold through the night. But in the summer, it's very hot. The garage stays really hot. And so our plan was to put a ventilation hole in the ceiling of the garage, and in the summer put a screen in it, and then in the winter switch over to just the panel. But in listening to you talk to the man who had mold issues and talking about circulation, I wonder if that is a wise thing to do, or if we could end up with mold in our garage or in our attic, the roof of the garage.
Right.
Not our actual house attic, but the attic of the garage.
Right, Nancy. I would say that is not a wise thing to do, because you want to ventilate the space above the garage. You don't want the air moving from your enclosed garage space up into the attic. So there should be some sort of, I assume that you have an attic above your garage. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's not attached to the, it's the garage is attached to the house, but the space above the garage is separate from the space above the house.
Right, but it still should have a ridge vent and a soffit vent.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. That's where you want your ventilation to occur. You want to make sure that you have adequate ridge vent and soffit vent. You should have 150 square feet for every, excuse me, 1 square foot of ventilation for every 150 square feet of roof area. So you can check that. If you don't have that, you can add more relatively easily to the soffit. But I would not.
We have a ventilation hole in the garage.
Say that again, Nancy, please.
Should we put a hole in the garage ceiling to vent into the garage attic?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. You don't want that air going up there. You want the space above your insulated garage to ventilate and cool itself that way. That being said, if you have a really hot day and you're bringing a car or two cars into your garage and you're heating up that space, that doesn't mean you can't leave the garage doors open until that cools down. Or if you have a man door, leave a man door open, particularly if you have a screen on that as well, until the engine temperatures come down. But I wouldn't open that up.
Better off putting a window in the garage and leaving that open?
Yeah, possibly, possibly. You know, I'm thinking about this as, you know, as I'm responding to you, and you definitely don't want a hole in your attic ceiling during heating months, because then you're going to create a condensation problem in the heating season. It's probably not as much of a problem in the summertime, or it may not be a problem in the summertime. But I would shy away from putting a hole in any ceiling unless you can really seal it up well.
In the winter.
In the winter, correct.
Thank you, Nancy. Thanks for your call. This is Vox Pop. I'm Sarah LaDuc. We're talking home repairs with Darren Tracy. The phone number 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And up next is Betsy. Hello, Betsy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just recently went through the home energy audit, and they came and did the blown-in insulation. I have aluminum siding, and what they told me they were going to do is use a little zip tool to unhook, you know, a piece across, take it off, blow in the insulation, and then snap it right back on. But they came and they did not have a zip tool. They used some sort of a cutting tool and cut one piece from the one below it, snapped out the piece, and then nailed back on each piece of aluminum siding, leaving nails and dents all over my aluminum siding. Is that like an appropriate way to do it, or should they have done it differently?
Hi, Betsy. The zip tool that you referred to is typically used with vinyl siding so that you can unlock one piece from the next. I'm not aware of any zip tool for aluminum siding. Vinyl siding is much more forgiving than aluminum siding in terms of its flexibility. You can bend it up,
right.
Whereas aluminum, you bend it, it retains its shape. So I don't think zip tool is the right tool for that project. I'm not sure how you blow insulation in through aluminum siding, to tell you the truth, without drilling a hole and patching it in.
Yeah, I watched a bunch of videos on it, and they said that they just remove a piece of aluminum siding, they drill a hole in the wood that's underneath, and then stick the hose in and blow in the insulation.
Yeah.
But I guess the issue that I'm having with it is how they put the siding back on with all these nails that now I have dents all over my siding, all over my house.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like it's easier said than done to remove that siding, because it's like a shingle. You start at the bottom and you work your way up, and the nail heads are hidden. So it'd be difficult to remove a piece of siding and get it back in and then re-nail it, because you have that concealed nail head. So I'm pleading ignorance on this, how you would best hide what you would have to do to get blown insulation in from the exterior with aluminum siding.
Yeah, I mean, the job's already done, so it's after the fact, but
right.
It seemed odd that they were nailing all this siding back up and leaving dents, so.
That doesn't seem right. No, it doesn't seem right.
No, it doesn't seem right to me either.
No.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry that they dented your house. Have a great day.
Me too.
Yes,
all
of course.
All right, thank you too.
Of course, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Darren Tracy is our guest. He is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and licensed master plumber, runs West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and is director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. 1-800-348-2551. Darren, your calls after this. Welcome back to Vox Pop. I'm Sarah LaDuc. We're talking home maintenance, repair, and improvement with Darren Tracy. The phone number, 800-348-2551. Darren, you wanted to mention something before we get back to the phones.
I do. As we're sitting here over the break, I was thinking about Nancy's call, the call before last, and she was wondering if it might be a good idea, a wise idea, to pull a hole in her garage ceiling because it seems like her garage is too hot in the summertime. And the more I think about that, I think it might be okay to do that because it's not like introducing warm air into the basement, the problem I described earlier in the program. You're introducing air that's actually cooler than the attic space going up into a hot space. So it's not going to condense up there. At least not in the summertime, and it will help with some of the ventilation. So I think that that might be helpful to cool her garage, but I would caution her that she needs to seal that up very well for the heating months. Otherwise, she could have a mold and condensation problem up in her attic, and I'm talking about insulate that and air seal as well. So, Nancy, I hope you're still listening, and get that to caveat footnote to original call.
Sounds good. We are going to go to Maureen in Springfield, Massachusetts. Hello, Maureen.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I had a mouse problem in my garage, and so I checked around the floor area and found like a chink and stuck something through it, and then went to the outside of the house, and sure enough, it went all the way out. And I know they can't probably be coming in there because on the outside, on the inside, the hole is like just at the top of a cinder block. I have a cinder block foundation. So it's like, you know, in between the two cinder blocks, there's a chunk missing of the mortar that kept them together. But when it comes out to the outside, it actually ends up about 10 inches above the ground, right there. And then I looked around and found that at the top of the foundation where it's the wood of the house, which is wood, not any kind of siding, there's little gaps and chunks, you know, like it's all uneven under there. I can't see it too well, but just running my fingers under there, it seems that there's little holes along this certain section. And I wondered if I can fix that myself. What substance, you know, could I use to put in there, like caulking or, you know, hydraulic cement or, you know, what could I use? Can I do it myself? Do I need to get somebody else to do it? All that stuff. That's what I was calling about.
Okay, Maureen. Those mice can be pesky little critters. And your
yeah.
Sarah, I'm looking at a number two. Looks like maybe a Ticonderoga pencil or
That's
something
right.
like that.
Yes.
We've been on the job site and watch a mouse go through the hole, the diameter of a pencil.
Right. Some,
they can get into really small spaces.
They can climb and they can squeeze.
Yeah. And you mentioned.
Well, I have 15 traps in my garage right now. And for the last two nights, since I found the hole, I've been catching a mice or two a night for a week. And then I found the hole, and I stuffed steel wool into the hole, but I don't have anything holding it there, just steel wool in that chunk. And since then, I haven't had a mouse in a trap. But I don't know if they're living in the walls, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And, well, let me get into...
Like I said, I don't think they're coming in that hole, but they might have at some time come in under the door or something, and then they can go out through that hole and jump down to the ground, but I can't imagine they could climb on the on the cement, you know, outside the foundation.
Oh, they definitely can climb up that concrete masonry unit, concrete blocks, cinder blocks. Those are terms.
Well, the outside of the foundation has been like stuccoed over.
Yeah, they can climb up really. You know,
oh, that's even
easier
to climb.
They would surprise you. They're like Spider-Man.
Okay, yeah. Great. So, well, okay, then, so, anyway, whatever.
Anyways, from the inside, since it's a big crack, I would probably use a repair mortar on the inside and the outside. Also, you could use a spray foam product. It's a polyurethane.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was wondering about, that. What do they call it? That
it
expands when you spray it into spaces?
That's correct. It's expanding polyurethane. And they have that laced with deterrents for insects and critters.
Oh, great.
So that would be probably the product of choice, because it does such a great job of getting in, traveling into nooks and crannies. You stick that little clear plastic hose in.
I wasn't sure because
I
sprayed into a hole in the ceiling around a ceiling fan where a bat had gotten in, and then my fan wouldn't work. It like gunked up all the workings of the fan and light.
Well, it does expand, so you have to take that into consideration. But if you're talking about concrete block and
it'll be okay.
Sill plate, there's room for expansion there. That would be my go-to product, to the spray foam with
for the outside. And on the inside, I should use a different substance.
What I would do is use the spray foam first and fill up any of the voids, and then on the inside and the outside, you could use a repair mortar, or on the inside, you could even use a caulk if the repair mortar pointing was too challenging for you. And I think it is something that you could do yourself.
Maureen, thank you for your call. Good luck with your mouse problem, if it is a problem. I don't mind when there's a mouse or two in my house, but then my husband is like,
I was thinking some people wouldn't want to hear about all the trapping going on.
Of course.
So
no, but
I'm staying away from that.
It's one's own preference. It's your home.
Right.
1-800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest on Vox Pop, and we will now go to Rich. Hello, Rich.
Oh, hi. Yeah, thanks for taking the call. Interesting show. I had a question about my tub. It's maybe 65 years old, it's not rusting or anything. It's in good shape, but it's pretty dull from scrubbing over the years. And I was just wondering whether or not you could take a buffing machine and some cement that you can polish like cars finishes and things, if that would work on a tub finish.
You polish up an old tub.
Right. That's a great question, Rich. And I do not know the answer to that. But I have not heard of that practice before for bringing back the finish to the tub. So I'm thinking there's probably some reason it doesn't work. But if you want to give it a try and call us back, try it in a spot that's not visible. That would be
across my fingers. Hope it works.
You might be getting into the metal, the porcelain coating might wear away. You might be getting into the metal of the tub. I know I've tried to refinish tubs myself in the past. I've abraded them with a fine steel wool, and I've coated them with epoxy, and that's held up fairly well, and I've also had that professionally done, and that's held up pretty well too. But I would be interested to see if that approach works. Rich, give it a try and call us back the next time I'm on, please.
You've stumped our expert.
Yeah, we'll
Rich.
Do. Yeah.
Thank you for your call. Of course. 1-800-348-2551. This is Home Improvement. Our guest is Darren Tracy here on Vox Pop today, and let's go to Sylvia. Hello, Sylvia.
Yes, hello. Hiya. Every spring and summer for the past 5 years or so, I get what you call gants, G-A, and the flying insects.
Gnats, yes. Yep.
And they say that, I just want to know how to get rid of them.
Okay.
And they're usually just around the sink.
Yeah,
the kitchen sink.
That's really out of my expertise. Yeah, I would just, use an insecticide off, yard spray, fly swatter.
If you look up, I think, Sylvia, you can make something.
I don't have a computer, but what would I look up? I get someone to do it.
I think there's some kind of like homemade trap you can make with like a empty empty soda bottle and maybe vinegar or something like that. I guess you would need to, I don't have it in my mind and I can't look it up right now, but I know they like, if you put something they kind of want to drink in a bottle, they sometimes go down into the bottle and then can't fly out and then they drown.
Oh, okay.
So,
all right. Guess I have to go to the library.
Sorry. Sorry to give you homework.
What would you look up?
Homemade insect trap or homemade gnat trap, I think, would get you there.
Okay. And the little tiny little flying insects.
Yeah, and they don't do much except
get in your eye. Is that the same as the gants, G-A-N-T-S?
Yeah, or fruit flies. Yep, they're similar. Not the same, but similar.
Oh, fruit flies.
All right.
Okay.
Good
so
luck.
No one knows.
Well,
thank
not,
you.
No one,
bye-bye.
Have a great day. 1-800-348-2551. We have lots of calls now, Darren. You're a popular guy. Let's go to Greg and Troy. Hello, Greg.
Hello there. Thanks for taking my call. I've been meaning to call. And can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
I can.
Okay. Let's see. I've got a 1890s house in Troy and in Lansingburg, where the houses are about 3 feet apart. The one side of the house is significantly taller than the other side of the house, at least on the floor. I can roll a marble from one side of the house to the other. Is there someone in particular or somebody that I can get to look at my house that will give me a good remedy?
Okay. So we have jacked up homes in the past. We've actually moved homes. We moved a three-story Victorian house about a third of a mile and put it on a new foundation. So we've done quite a bit of that work. Smaller jacking we've done with our own crew, larger jackings. In that particular job I mentioned, we subcontracted that out to a house mover. Can I name that house mover?
Sure.
On this show? It's Alarman House Movers, and they're out of Schuylerville area, New York, and they're a fourth generation house moving business. So if you want to jack up the whole structure, they're one professional company that can do it. There are others in the area. I'm not getting paid by them to say their name or anything. It's just one that company that I have used that could do that job on a smaller scale. If you wanted to jack it up a little bit here or there, there are quite a few contractors out there that could do the jacking work. Houses are heavy, so if you're trying to move instead of just one rotted beam or rotted joist, the whole house on one side, you're picking up tens of thousands of pounds, and you need to approach that and spread the load out, have some cribbing, and really have some expertise when you're doing that. So good luck with that, and give Larman a try.
All right, then. Thank you. Side note is that I have a dirt floored basement. So is there... what would they have to do to find something solid enough to jack against?
That's not a problem, because what they do is they haul some 6x6 timbers in, and they're about 4 feet long, and they create what's called a cribbing. It's like a square cribbing, and it's like log cabins alternating cribbing, and they build that up to a point where they think it's okay to put their jack, and then they put their jack in and then jack the whole thing up. It's really cool. If you go to my website, you might even see some pictures of that. It's West Branch Inc. or West Branch Engineering. And also on my website is a detail maybe a few details of how to put some poly down on your basement and some pavers and concrete to improve the livability of your building, keeping the moisture down. So good luck with that.
It's obviously not something that's a home remedy, but a whole professional crew.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like something you can take care of yourself, Craig. But good luck. I almost automatically gave the phone number again, but that would be foolish because the lines are full and we are running out of time. Shall we speak with Alex in North Bennington? Hello, Alex.
Hello.
Hi. Quick as you can. We're running out of time.
My call.
You got it.
Okay. So I have a 15-year-old home I just moved into this past November, a two-car garage that's insulated on the vertical walls, but also the eaves are also insulated. And my inspector that I accompanied prior to buying the house, I was told by him, I think, that I should remove that eave insulation.
That's correct. The only reason you'd have eave insulation is if your whole attic was spray foam to the underside of the roof sheathing. Otherwise, you want that attic space to breathe, and you need the area under the eaves to be open. It's called a soffit vent, to provide entrance for air to continue up, washing the underside of the roof decking, and then exiting the ridge vent. So it sounds like you need to remove that.
Okay, great. He had a garage heater in there. It still does. We have it now, and I probably wanted to cut down the heat loss. So yes,
not the right way to do it.
All right, Alex.
Yeah, he said it should be just. Yeah. Got it. Thanks.
No, thank you. Have a great day, Darren. Give us your email address and your website again, please.
Okay, it's Darren@WestBranchInc.com. And I have two websites. One is for my engineering company. Can you just search westbranchengineering.com?
Westbranchengineering.com.
And the other for construction, and there's some interesting photos there. It's westbranchinc.com.
Westbranchinc.com. And your email address was Darren@westbranchinc.com.
That's correct.
If people need to ask any quick little questions, you might entertain them, which is so generous of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
We are out of time, but I want to thank everyone who called in. Apologize to those we left on the line. There are several people, and I am very sorry. Thank you again, Darren, for being here. Underwriting support for Vox Pop comes from Red Mannequin at 1 Main Street in Chatham, New York, a curated collection of clothing, accessories, and gifts designed by selected artisans, CP Shades, James Purse, Trippin' Shoes, redmannequin.com, and The Daily Grind in Albany, New York, a proud underwriter of WAMC, roasting and serving coffee for over 40 years, serving breakfast all day, open 7 days, dailygrind.com. Thank you for joining us today for Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Melissa Keys. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Tomorrow we will discuss a topic close to my heart because my husband enjoys it, and that is hiking. That's tomorrow at 2. Stay tuned now for 51%.